Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week 7 of the college fantasy football season is here, and I won't be taking it on alone. This week, Justin Leo, aka Volume Pigs, rejoins the show to help us get prepared for another awesome week of CFF. As always, we'll be giving you a couple of players at each of the main positions that we are starting, a couple of whom that we will be sitting, and then we'll finish up with some fan-submitted start-sit questions. We've got all of that and more coming right after this. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Wednesday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday and Wednesday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the extraordinary work we're doing here, head on over to campuscanton.com and subscribe there with one of our fantastic tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devy, and C2C betting needs, DFS needs, all of that, including articles, rankings, projections, tools, and even more than that. You can find me in the show on Twitter. I am at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty, and the handsome fellow finally rejoining the show is Justin Leo, aka Volume Pigs, the newest homeowner on the Canadian streets. Justin, welcome back to the show, man.
Hey, man. Yeah, no, and warm welcome as always. It feels good to be back. Took a little bit of a hiatus there. Yeah, I had some stuff offline that I had to take care of, but I think I'm over the hill now. I think I'm finally back. I can sort of throw myself fully back at CFF, and you know, it feels good to be back here. You know, I'm not gonna say anything about Nate this time around because you know, I feel like it's becoming too much. But I know I'm here to give the people what they want, and yeah, man, happy to be back.
Well, you've been continuing to put out your awesome articles every single week over at volumepigs.com. If, for those of you, for whatever reason, if you're just joining the show at this point in the season, you've never heard Justin come on the show before, he puts out incredible content every single week over on his website. And he graciously comes on to help me with these start-sit shows. Each of the last 2 years, he would have been here had he not been taking care of some real-life stuff the last month here. But he is back, and we will have a normal start-sit show, hopefully here for the next couple of weeks. And with that, Justin, shall we get into this? Again, we got week 7. I guess I should ask you, because I haven't heard from you in a while, in terms of, like, you know, being on the show. Like, how are your leagues treating you? Are you being successful?
Oh, this year is terrible. Yeah, well, I'm only in 2 leagues this year, so I scaled back quite a bit because I knew I'd be pretty busy again with the aforementioned IRL stuff this fall. So I'm only in 2 leagues, my home league, which is the Golden Pig. And, you know, there's a group of teams in that one that are just running away with it. Froton, Cats, some of those guys that names people will recognize. And then Nate's league. And that one is going okay. I don't think anybody is going to be able to beat Nate, though. So it's sort of all for naught. You know, I've been making trades to compete for this year, but I kind of know in the back of my mind, like, there's no way. So yeah, I'm not going to say I've given up on my leagues, but they're just kind of like, I don't know. They're sort of just on the back burner of my mind. I'm sort of, I don't know, just focusing on content now. But you know how it is. I mean, you compete every week in your leagues, play to the end. So we'll see how it goes.
Play to the whistle. As I said, I actually had somebody reach out to me earlier this week, and they were honest with me, and I appreciate the honesty, like in one of my dynasty leagues, saying that, like, hey, I'm probably not going to participate next year. Like, how should I handle trades? And I just told them, like, play to the whistle. Like, yeah, you're in the league at least until the end of the year, right? So you might as well, if you're going to trade, if that's something you're going to want to do, you might as well make trades as if you are going to stick around. Because one, you might change your mind. You might change. You might decide, hey, I want to come back, and therefore you don't want to set yourself up for failure. But also, too, it's just kind of common decency to like go ahead and set that team up for success going into the future. So,
well, I agree with you. Another point. Sorry to cut you off.
Go ahead.
There might be a little delay there on timing, but another point is on the topic of decency is for the competitive integrity for the rest of the league too. Like if you're making really one-sided trades on your way out to some other team, right? Like it hurts everybody else's chances trying to compete. So, you know, also don't just do a fire sale just for the sake of doing so. Try to keep it, you know, somewhat reasonable when you're trading out as well.
I know this is not a dynasty podcast, but now you got me going here. I'm not totally against teams that like know they're not going to make it, like having fire sales on like seniors and stuff like that. But I agree with you on the fact of like, make sure that they're reasonable trades, right? Like,
yeah, that's the point. Yeah.
Like make sure that you're getting something back. Don't just sell them for as cheap as possible just to get rid of them. Right.
And then exactly.
You're not doing yourself a favor. You're not doing anybody else a favor by doing that. So,
yes.
All right. That's, again, enough dynasty talk. Maybe we'll get you on the next Defending the Natty at some point.
I want to be. I need to be on the same call with Nate at least once. All the crap I've talked, all our back and forths on Twitter, I have to get on the call at least once.
Maybe we'll make it happen towards the end of the season here.
Let's do it.
Anyway, let's actually get into our Start Sit show. Again, for those of you who have not heard our show before here, basically, we have three main segments here. We do our starts, we do our sits, and then we answer some of y'all's start sit questions. Our starts, the rules are they must be players outside the top 60 in total points to this point in the season, right? We're not giving you guys, oh, start Caleb Johnson this week. No, that doesn't help anybody. We're not telling you to start, you know.
Ashton Jeanty,
there you go. Thank you. For some reason, I just couldn't think of an obvious name. And then, like, on the sit side of things, right, we have to choose a player in their respective position within the top 40 of their position, right? That way we're not telling you, hey, sit Umari Hatcher this week. It's like, yeah, well, duh, you're probably not starting him in any league this week. But and then your start sit questions are free-for-alls. Y'all submit that to us. If you want to get your start sit question on the show in the future, make sure you're following the @ChasingTheNatty account. Honestly, I would turn on notifications for that account, not only because you get the notification of the tweet we put up every single week in order to submit your questions, but also you'll know literally the minute a new show drops. And so that'll be a great way for you to keep up with everything that we do here. And so that being said, Justin, let's get on into it. Before we get to it, though, I will have to say one little reminder, though, if you are listening to the show, first of all, I appreciate you greatly. And if you have not already, make sure you show us some love by leaving a like, comment, and a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening, and make sure you follow the show wherever you're listening. Not only does that support us, but it also supports the game of college fantasy football in general. Gets us in front of the eyeballs of people who might be interested in this sort of thing, but just don't know that there's content like this out here. So, that being said, now let's get on over to our sit start show for this week. We're heading into week 7. Decent amount of teams on bye this week. I think there's like, what, 15-ish teams, 15 to 20 teams on bye this week. So not quite as bad as last week, but definitely some of y'all are going to need some pretty good starts here. So I think we'll go ahead and hit up those. With Justin and I both on here, we each have one start to give at each respective position. And I should keep track of these over the next week just to make sure that we do indeed do well, and we can have a little competition between
sure.
And
yeah.
also this is way easier to keep track of every single week rather than every single start sit question. Anyway,
yeah, I remember we were tracking something along the lines of that last year, and it just got untenable right towards the end.
So. It was one of those things where I was trying to keep up with it every single week, but with so many things going on, I just it was something where I was like, oh wait, it's been like 3 weeks since I updated that. this is a lot easier to keep track of. So speaking of which, Justin.
Yeah,
I'll let you start with yours here. Who is your quarterback here? And once again, a quick reminder, these are players outside the top 60 to this point in the season. Who's your quarterback that you are starting?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, as Jared said, we're choosing players outside the sort of normal scope, but these are still CFF relevant guys and guys that we think are going to be good this week in particular. And my selection at the quarterback position is a handsome young devil named Caden Samonza. He has his own fanboy club within the CFF space, maybe population of one. I know Andrew Katz likes him a lot. But the formula is fairly simple. He's actually been okay this year. He's not been great, but he has, you know, scored several games of 20 points or more. In fact, I'm looking at his stats. He's got three of his five. He scored 20 points or more. One of those was a 34 point game, albeit that was against an FCS opponent. But the opponent they're playing this week might, you know, is pretty much the closest thing you're going to get to, one of the closest things you're going to get to an FCS opponent in the FBS. So they're playing Kent State, who are terrible. They usually are, and they have been for the last at least 2 seasons. And you know, Samonza, he's not really a runner. So what you're kind of hoping for is he's going to get three touchdowns. You hope at least, hopefully more than that, but three touchdowns is kind of what you're looking for to have a good day. In his three games where he scored 20 or more points, he's scored three or more passing touchdowns. So that's kind of what I'm looking at there. You know, it's a Mac, it's a Mac on Mac game. The over under is set at 16.5 with Ball State favored by 7. So, you know, this feels like a good game script. And one of the nice things about Ball State is, although their best player on offense, probably the tailback Braden Sloan, a lot of his production comes through the air anyways. So, you know, you're going to get those points with Simones as well. It's like their best player is sort of a running back who also kind of plays slot receiver almost. You can kind of think of it that way, where, you know, there's going to be a lot of dump offs and check downs there too for yards after catch possibilities. So yeah, I mean, I think Simones, you could certainly do worse this week. Again, there's lots of buys piling up. Some of you out there are going to be in need. And, you know, I think this one, the logic is fairly simple. Nothing's a sure thing in CFF, but I like Simones to hit around that 20-point mark. Hopefully he can get 25 or more, but certainly 20 points feels in play this week.
I think given the fact that, you know, he scored 24.78 points versus Western Michigan last week, I think that it's very possible for him to hit 25 points this week. You did mention it again, Braden Sloan probably is the biggest hurdle for him to overcome here, considering Sloan is their best player on offense by a decent bit. But you also can't ask for a better matchup than this, right? According to our numbers over at C2C Winning Edge, which, by the way, I'll be referencing them a lot tonight. I'm letting you guys know right now because there's a lot of really good matchups this week. Kent State is dead last in defensive team performance, which, for those of you who don't know, that is Nick Allen's metric, where he measures, as the name sounds, how these teams are performing against their respective competition. And it kind of accounts for the difficulty of their schedule and everything like that. Regardless of anything else, Kent State's dead last. They're just terrible. It is a bottom feeder in the country. And fortunately for Kent State, Ball State is also that way, which is why, again, we're expecting a lot of points in this game. And I'm actually been pleasantly surprised with Samonza. I was not a believer after week one. And on one hand, I was kind of right not to be because, again, the schedule is kind of brutal coming up. But I've been pleasantly surprised by the number of pass attempts that he's been getting per game. Like, he's gotten 34 pass attempts plus in four out of his 5 games. The only game he didn't was Miami, and in that game, Ball State just straight up gave up after like 2 quarters, and they just took him out. They took out a lot of their best players, and they just didn't want anybody to get hurt at that point. So I actually think that this is a great call by Justin here. The only thing is, like you said, Justin, I wish there was a little bit more rushing here, so you could probably get a little bit of a higher ceiling here. But if you want a safe floor pick, I think Simmons is in for a really good week.
Yeah, if Samonza had rushing upside, I mean, he'd be a smash play this week. It would be a no-brainer. But, you know, unfortunately, again, you're going to be relying on those three touchdowns, probably passing touchdowns. But I think that's in play, and hopefully he scores more.
All right, I'll go ahead and put up my starting quarterback for this week. Last week I hit a dud when I said I called for the Jalen Raynor resurgence, and that did not happen. In fact, that game was way lower scoring than I ever anticipated it being. But I'm going back to the well again. I'm gonna go with another quarterback that's disappointed up until this point in the season, definitely outside the top 60. But I'm going to go with Seth Hennigan. He's got a matchup against South Florida this upcoming week. boy, Hennigan, it's been so dang frustrating with him because the touchdown equity is just not here for Hennigan this year. He's currently 30th in the country in passing yards, which is definitely a step back from where he was last year. I think last year he finished 6th in the country in passing yards, so they're clearly not passing as much, but he's 60th in passing touchdowns. He has not had two or more passing touchdowns in a single game so far. In fact, last week against Middle Tennessee, he had zero. Just wild in terms of how little opportunities he is getting to score. To give you guys an idea, currently this year, he is scoring a touchdown every 191 yards that he is throwing, or once every 27.9 throws. That is insanely low. That is terrible touchdown luck. To give you an idea, last year, he was scoring a touchdown once every 121 yards and once every 14.9 throws. Like, he is basically throwing half the touchdowns in the same number of throws this year, which is, I've never seen a quarterback regress in touchdowns like this, which tells me this has to balance out at one point, right? And to me, this weekend seems a prime place for it to do so. South Florida is currently 123rd in passing defensive team performance, which is bottom 15 in the country. They're bottom 2 in passing yards given up in each game, averaging 332.5 yards per game through the air. I am seeing some big plays through the passing game this weekend. It's a high-scoring game. Memphis favored by 7.5, total of 60.5. I think Hennigan finds his groove this weekend, and we finally see him hit 30-plus this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good call. You know, Hennigan, such a perplexing player this year. You know, he's always been, or at least it feels like he's always been for the last couple of seasons, you know, sort of a consistent quarterback asset, never great, but always good, always solid. And, you know, you look at the usage and you sort of hit on it there, and I'm looking at the stats. It's like 30 pass attempts, 38, 56, and 41, right? Like the usage is still pretty good. And Memphis overall is kind of puzzling because it's like a senior-laden offense, you know, like that bunch of receivers that came back from a year ago, got some good tailbacks. So, the formula feels fairly simple. So it's quite strange that Hennigan has not only at least maintained what he was doing for like the last two seasons, which albeit he wasn't amazing, but he was solid. This year, though, he's been borderline sort of unusable. But I think it is a good call. This is a good matchup. I mean, USF has that double-edged appeal in that they're good on offense, they move fast on offense, bad on defense. So I like this matchup, and I think it's a good call.
All right, Justin, let's look at your running back. Which running back are you starting this week outside the top 60 here?
Yeah, so this is a name, I think somewhat of a forgotten name, sort of popped a few weeks ago because he had a lot of usage, looked like the clear bell cow there for Kentucky. And then he's kind of, you know, dwindled back down. So the name is Demi Sumo. He had a good game a couple weeks ago. Still been solid, but not quite to the same level since. But I'm looking at that Vanderbilt team, and obviously they had that huge game last weekend. But this is the cruel sort of cycle of college football. You know, momentum, it sort of swings up and down. And just like Alabama had a big game the weekend before, come out flat this prior weekend, I'm thinking sort of along those lines that something similar might happen with Vanderbilt, albeit they're not, you know, the same sort of position of an Alabama team. But big high the weekend before, I think in this weekend going into sort of a sleepy matchup with Kentucky, Kentucky might be able to catch them sort of flat-footed. And if that happens, I think there'll just be lots of scoring opportunities for all of Kentucky's players. Again, this could go the complete opposite way and just be a slugfest, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. And Demi Sumo, I'm not convinced that he's like absolutely the bell cow there because the evidence doesn't really support that, but he's involved enough. And this could be a game where Kentucky just has the lead and just sort of slowly strangles Vanderbilt in the second half via the run game and tries to just keep them out of the game, keep Pavia out of the game. So I'm looking at Sumo as a potential sort of, I don't know if I'd call him a hidden gem, but, you know, as a callback for a few weeks ago, I think some people probably forgot about him. He's probably available on the waivers now. If you're looking for a plug and play option, you could do worse, I think.
No, he definitely is still available on waivers. He's currently rostered on 10% of rosters.
There you go.
And I think, again, you're kind of nailing it on the head here that at least if you're looking at what Vegas has given us with the numbers, right, Kentucky's favored by 14. They're playing at home. The over-under on this game is 45.5. So Vegas is expecting a bit of a slugfest here, right? That very much benefits the likes of Dimi Sumo. Now, I can't remember. Have they said that Chip Traianum is supposed to be back this week or next week? I don't think they've made an official announcement, but it is kind of getting right around that time. And maybe he doesn't come back at all this year. Maybe he's one of those guys that's quietly redshirting throughout the rest of the year. But that is something to kind of keep an eye out here. Jason Patterson should be back as well. We will definitely see. But like you kind of mentioned, like when Kentucky needed something to get something going on offense, they turned to Dimi Sumo, right? 22 mm-hmm. carries versus Georgia, 98 yards in that game, which is very impressive. Against South Carolina, when literally nothing else was working on that offense, Sumo was doing well, 17 carries, 70 yards in that game. A little bit less usage against Ole Miss there. Again, 11 carries, 47 yards. But I have a feeling that that game, I don't know how much of that game you watched, Justin, but like that game, it never felt like either team needed to run the ball. Like it felt like in that game that both teams recognized that in order to win this game, you got to move the ball through the air. So I think both teams kind of, even though it's a relatively low scoring game, they're 20-17. I think they kind of recognize like we're not going to move the ball very well against this Ole Miss defense. So
yeah, no, I watched a bit of that game, and I'm in agreement with what you said there. And yeah, I mean, he's only hit 20 carries once this year. So like, again, I want to be careful. And you mentioned those two names, you know, there's still a question mark with the other guys in the room. I don't think he's like a smash play for 20-25 carries, but this could be a case where, you know, even 10 to 15 carries could get him to 100 yards and a score. I say cautiously, now that I've said that, probably won't happen. You know how these things go, but I don't know that he needs to have like massive usage in this one. You know, Vanderbilt, I know they had a big win last year, but they're still the weak link of the SEC. So it's a good game script, I think, for Kentucky.
Yeah, the one thing I will maybe caution a little bit is that when you look at the team performance numbers here from C2C Winning Edge, Vanderbilt does have a weakness on defense, and that is through the passing game, where they're 116th in passing defensive team performance, but they're 48th in the country versus the run. So may not be able to utilize that as much. Might be a good week for one Dane Key, who I gave out as a waiver pickup of a week or two ago.
So yeah, no, good shout out. Yeah.
Even still, let's move on to my running back here. You're talking about you don't think Sumo is a lock for 25 touches per game. My guy here, Rasul Faison, basically. I'm not sure. Regardless, he's locked in for 25 touches, I think, this week. This is a guy that is still pretty widely available in a lot of leagues that is basically a late season volume pick here, right? He didn't start off the season this way, but over the last 3 weeks, we've seen Utah State very much shift their offensive focus to making sure Faison gets the ball here. 19 carries versus against Utah. 27 carries versus Temple, 26 carries versus Boise State, 109 plus yards in every single one of those games, a touchdown each of the last 2 weeks. Very much, if you just want to play for volume, this is the guy to go for. And a couple of things did kind of give me pause a little bit at first. One, UNLV is favored by 18 in this game. So at first I was like, oh, well, game script may not help him. That didn't matter the last 2 weeks when Utah State was getting blown out by Temple and Boise State. They still found a way to get Faison the ball 27 times, right? So I don't think that'll change this week here. I did look, and UNLV's team defensive performance against the run is actually 54th in the country, which isn't, you know, elite or anything like that, but it is also better than I was kind of anticipating. But I went and looked at UNLV and what they have faced so far this year. And according to Fantrax, they're 76 versus RB so far this year. And I even question how well they really are, considering they've only faced real RB1s twice so far, right? They've faced Devin Neal, who had 23 carries, 120 yards, granted, power four back. And then LaQuint Allen, 19 carries, 71 yards, and two touchdowns in that game. I think that whenever UNLV is facing a true workhorse back, they're still finding ways to get some production. And shoot, Faison was able to put up 115 yards versus Utah's defense. And we'll get to them here in a little bit with another player with one of my sits, and they are elite when it comes, they're borderline elite when it comes to their defensive performance against the run. So I have no problem with Faison as a start this week. I think he's pretty widely available. Love him.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point that you made there too, that, you know, although we're several games into the season now, we still have to acknowledge the limitations of the sample size when we're talking about team statistics against the run and various defensive or offensive statistics. It is still sort of quite skewed, right? You know, most of these teams have played five games. You know, three of those are out of conference opponents, maybe four of them. So, you know, some of these stats on what teams are good at right now, you still have to take it with a bit of a grain of salt. But with Faison as well, I think another point, and you kind of hit on it, you know, with some of these guys who are such high volume players, you know, a lot of the sort of standard concerns that I normally have, I kind of ignore, although I'm going to contradict myself a little bit in a segment on one specific player later on. But generally, that's kind of my approach as well, is, you know, even if they're going to be losing by a lot, as long as Faison's sort of a huge focal point of that offense, you know, it's not a bad play, not a bad idea. And again, this is a G5 versus G5 opponent. Even if UNLV is a better team overall within the G5 spectrum, it's not like this is an out-of-conference opponent where, you know, you're playing Alabama or something like that. And so, you know, I don't know that the game script is that big of a concern for me either. I think it's a good pick. You know, I know the statistics that you were asking me in pre-show is a sort of a cheesy pick. I know the statistics say he's not rostered too much right now, but I don't know. I think he should, anybody where he's available, I mean, he should absolutely be rostered and picked up immediately because, yeah, I mean, it's quite clear he's taken over as the bell cow there.
All right, Justin, who is your start at wide receiver?
Yeah. Yeah, so this one, I'm not sure what I should say. So as you know, I had Caden Prather originally there, and it looks like you put in, and yeah, I'm sympathetic to the fact, like, you had to make the graphic earlier on, and that's what it's showing.
Oh, I just realized, you're right. I totally just realized I never updated that.
No, it's all good. Because, like, it was fairly, not at all. It was fairly last minute. So for the people listening, I originally had my pick here as Caden Prather, Maryland's receiver, but there's some injury news. We're not really sure if he's going to be full go this weekend. So what I did at sort of very last minute was I swapped the name out, and the name I chose is Raylan Sharp, Fresno State, who play Washington State this week. So, you know, I mean, Raylan Sharp is coming off, well, he's coming off a bye week, but before that it was, he saw 16 targets, I believe, which is, you know, quite notable. Fresno State, that offense has been sort of an offense for the last 2 years where it's kind of, you know, different guys each week who pop off. They haven't really had like one established guy who just for the entire season kills it. So that is a bit of a concern, and that might be sort of the case of what's happening this year too. But Raylan Sharp, who's an FCS transfer, this is his first year with Fresno. You know, I can sort of convince myself with this line of thinking, well, it's his first year. It took him a few games to sort of get his footing. Now he's sort of ascending. We can maybe ride that wave. 16 targets last week. What's he going to do this week? You know, the matchup doesn't really scare me. I mean, Washington State, former P4 team, I still think of them as a P4, but one of the sort of lower end P4s. And I don't think this is going to be a terrible game for Fresno State's players. At the very least, they should be trailing, which is actually good for the receivers. So Raylan Sharp, again, it's a pretty simple formula. You know, I don't know really what to expect with his volume this week, but he has been sort of ascending in his role. And if that continues, then he could be in for, you know, a really nice game this weekend.
I love this call out. This is a game that you absolutely should be taking advantage of if you're looking for some guys to start this week. Because even outside of Sharp, right? I know Delaina and Moss are both rostered. If you have them, I'd be starting them. Any of the Wazoo receivers, like, I would be trying to find ways to incorporate them because this is going to be a high-scoring game. Again, over-under of 61.5 here. I will caution slightly on the 16 targets versus UNLV there. Again, Fresno got absolutely blown out of the water in this game, and so they were forced to pass in order to keep up. So I think there's a bit higher passing volume than necessarily we were expecting in that game from them. So I don't think we're going to realistically see 16 targets go Sharpe's way again, especially with Moss and Delanna both out there, right? The other thing I'll kind of caution with Sharpe is that of the three wide receivers for Fresno, he is easily the lowest ADOT of the three. So if you're in a PPR league, I love the play with Sharpe, right? Just get those receptions. But if you're looking for consistent production per catch, probably not the guy you would love to go with there. But regardless, this is a fantastic matchup to take advantage of. I think this is a great call out. And honestly, I like it better than your Caden Prather pick, even if Prather was out there.
Well, so it worked out well for me there then, I guess. Luck from the CFF gods.
I'm going to stick in the Mountain West with my pick here. I'm going Justin Lockhart, wide receiver out of San Jose State. They get a matchup with Colorado State this upcoming weekend. That game, I'll be real, the over-under is a little lower than I was expecting, 56.5, considering that, you know, Colorado State was able to push Oregon State into the 30s last week. I mean, granted, the game did go to overtime, but, you know, they both scored 30 plus in regular season or regulation. That's the word I'm looking for. I fully expect both San Jose State and Colorado State, two teams with subpar defenses, above average offense, at least in San Jose State. Colorado State, I'm still not entirely sure what to believe with their offense right now. Very disappointed with Fowler Nicolosi right now, but Vegas has this game close. San Jose State's favored by 1.5 points here, so regardless, both teams are expected to score here, and I think both teams are going to have to move the ball through the air here, and I think Lockhart is absolutely a play that you can go for. Obviously, Nick Nash is Nick Nash. He's being elite so far, but Lockhart's the clear number two guy for Emmett Brown, and if any defense starts bracketing Nick Nash, I think Lockhart becomes the instant value here. He's had himself some really nice volume games. He's had 7+ targets in four out of his last five games. The only game he didn't was against Air Force, and that was a low-scoring affair regardless. And so I think that this is an excellent weekend where I can expect Lockhart to probably find the end zone once or twice, and I think he'll make for a very, very nice play. So what do you think, Justin?
Yeah, no, I love the pick as well. You know, San Jose State is such a great CFF team this year, you know, especially in that passing game where you look at how much volume those top two receivers get. You know, I mean, Nick Nash's volume has been absurd, but Lockhart's volume has actually been pretty good in its own right. I mean, you know, multiple games there of 7 or more targets. He's even had an 11 target game. So he's a great sort of wide receiver too, particularly in PPR. You know, touchdown production maybe hasn't quite been to the same level of Nick Nash, but still a good player. And, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is another, you know, probably good matchup that you might want to sort of grab a piece of. You know, and you never know. I mean, eventually teams are going to have to figure out how to lock in on Nick Nash, right? Double him, do something, right? And force. I have a feeling Lockhart's going to have like a massive game at some point this season. Not that big of a hot take, right? But there's going to be some team that figures out how to double team Nash, and then Lockhart just gets a bunch of targets. So, yeah, I like the pick.
All righty. Let's move on to our sits here. I'll start it off here since I let you go first on all of the starts here. My sit quarterback for this week, again, reminder to everybody, these are players that are inside the top 40 for their respective positions in total points. My sit for this week is Sam Levitt, who is just inside the top 35 there. He's got a matchup against Utah this week. And quite frankly, this boils down to one thing. And that is, this is by far Levitt's worst matchup of the year so far. And Levitt has, while he's been very consistent, right? Again, he's been right there between 19 and 30 points pretty much all year long. One, he's only crossed 35 fantasy points once so far. And two, as I mentioned before, this matchup is terrible compared to the rest, right? Let's take a look at EPA per play defensively, right? Wyoming is 19th. Mississippi State is 126th. Texas State is 37th. Texas Tech is 86th. Kansas is 84th. Justin, I don't know if you're looking at my notes here, but you want to venture to guess you are looking at my notes?
I am. I have his games and the stats that you have there.
Okay, I was going to try to play a game and see if you could guess what Utah is, but Utah's defense is 10th in EPA per play. Like I kind of mentioned, they're pretty elite when it comes to their defensive performance so far. In team defensive performance, right, they're 12th versus, you know, Wyoming, 116th, Mississippi State, 120th, Texas Tech, 78th, Kansas, 95th. This is just not a very good matchup overall for Levitt here. considering that, again, he's been consistent. So I like the idea of him still kind of hitting, you know, that 18 to 21 point range in this matchup. But when it comes to potential other guys that I could put out there, I think that there's just much better matchups to look elsewhere this week. So I'm sitting Sam Levitt wherever I can.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing really major that I disagree with there. I mean, this is definitely a tough opponent this week. I mean, Utah traditionally strong defense, and this year's no exception, no difference. And yeah, I mean, you look at that schedule that they've played so far. I mean, he's hit 20 points 4 out of 5 times. But as you mentioned, I mean, these have been fairly weak defenses. So the recipe here, you know, against Utah, I think it does spell trouble for Levitt. It depends on sort of how desperate you are. I mean, I would agree as well with you in terms of, I think the floor is not that bad. I mean, he rushes it as well, right? I mean, he's not prolific, but, you know, he's usually around 10 rush attempts per game. He scored, what is it, 4 rushing touchdowns in 5 games here. So, you know, he has both of those tools in his toolkit. But again, tough matchup. Depending on how desperate you are, I mean, you know, I wouldn't say automatic sit, but I mean, depends on what other options you have. And yeah, Levitt is certainly not one that I'm high on this week.
All right, what about you? Which quarterback are you sitting for this week, Justin?
Yeah, well, so this is a slightly bigger name than Levitt, and has been a disappointing player this year. Is Oregon's Dylan Gabriel. In fact, I mean, really all of the top sort of first round QBs in CFF this year have kind of been disappointing, strangely enough. But specifically on Gabriel, you know, this is going to be a great game this weekend as a college football fan. But for CFFS, that's on Oregon, playing against Ohio State this weekend, that's going to be their toughest defense probably by far that they've played so far. Oregon hasn't exactly been fantastic to start the year. I mean, in close games of Idaho, Boise State, you know, they had 2 special teams touchdowns to overcome Boise State, but you know, that was another strange one. So I'm currently, you know, not really sure what to make of Oregon. Some things haven't quite happened there that I expected. Evan Stewart, for one, he's kind of been missing, and Dylan Gabriel's really sort of taken a step back, which has been a surprise. And yeah, I mean, this is going to be a tough game. You know, it's going to be a great game, but I think it's going to be a tough game in terms of, you know, trying to score on Ohio State's defense. You know, we don't really know how good Ohio State is. They haven't really played anybody yet, but, you know, we can kind of infer. I mean, their roster is pretty loaded, and they've got a lot of great players on defense, and Gabriel hasn't been great so far. So it'd be different if Gabriel was playing lights out all season and this is, you know, just a top opponent, but he hasn't really been that great this season. I don't really trust him. So it says much of the fact that I don't really know what to make of Gabriel and Oregon right now, and the fact that this is a tough defense that they're going to be playing against, I think. So that's my pick for sit at quarterback.
Tough defense indeed. If we look at Nick Allen's C2C winning edge numbers, he has currently the Ohio State Buckeyes as third in defensive EPA per play and third in team defense performance so far. Like, they haven't played much, but they've shut down the teams that they have, and they've done what they're supposed to so far. On the opposite side here, like, Oregon to me is so hard to figure out how to judge how they're going to do in these elite matchups. Because if you look at the last couple of years, thanks to them playing against the Pac-12 and Liberty in the bowl game, we just haven't had good examples of Oregon playing against elite defenses. We don't really know if this is an offense, even though we like it for the most part for CFF, right? It's tough to see if it really translates against the top of the top. And arguably the last time we did see that was against Georgia to start the 2022 season. But that was, one, just so long ago, and two, that was when so many of those pieces were, that was literally the first game of Dan Lanning's tenure there, right? And that wasn't even the same offensive coordinator. So, like, arguably, I think it's tough to, or I think it's tough to really gauge, like, how, based on history, what's going to go on here. Vegas seems pretty convinced that Oregon will find some ways to score in this game. Again, their team total for this game, Oregon's is 26.25. So you're looking at a solid, you know, potentially four touchdowns, three touchdowns plus two field goals. So there's a path for Gabriel to finish with a solid day, but also at the same time, right, like looking at how good this Ohio State defense has been so far this year, I'm in agreement with you. If you can find other options, I think it's best to do so. Or Oregon's done nothing but hide their entire playbook up until this point. They're about to absolutely destroy Ohio State and Eugene. So
that was one thing in the back of my mind. Yeah, as you were talking, I was like, you know, the one possibility is that Oregon has just been hiding and playing possum. I doubt it, but we'll find out this weekend.
All right, running backs. Let's take a look at some guys that we're sitting this week. My guy that I'm sitting in the top 40 running back so far this year is Kwadlee Conley, running back out of Arizona, going up against BYU this weekend. He has been great since Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt just lost eligibility all of a sudden. But a couple of things are making me lean towards the way of sitting Conley this week and trying to find some other options. One, as much as I've kind of poo-pooed on BYU, their defensive performance so far has been pretty solid. They're currently 38th in the country when it comes to allowing rushing production per game there at 121.3 yards per game. So that's easily one of the toughest defenses that Arizona's rushing attack has faced so far this year. They're currently 40th in rushing defensive team production, 28th in EPA per play allowed defensively. Last time Conley faced a team with similar rankings was, there they are again, Utah, 36th in rushing defensive team production, 10th in EPA per play. Conley was held scoreless in that game and finished with the second lowest rushing total of the year at 72. So I fully expect, given the fact that, again, Utah or BYU's been allowing roughly about 120, I could see him finishing with about 60 to 70 yards again here. And it also doesn't help that Kedrick Riscano has kept this from becoming a full-on workhorse situation. So it seems like that 14 to 15 carries is once again Conley's limit. So that's already kind of putting yourself in the hole a little bit of relying on him to do something within those limited opportunities. So on top of everything else, this game's kind of expected to be lower scoring. It's on the wrong side of 50 when it comes to the over-under in this game. I just think plenty of other running back options out there. I'm sitting Conley. What do you think, Justin?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I look at Conley's game log, and you know, he's seeing pretty good levels of volume, albeit maybe not all through carries. You know, he has a game there of 9 targets against Texas Tech. Generally sees, you know, multiple targets per game. So I do like that dual usage. BYU, right? What a surprise this year. You know, to see them at the top of the Big 12, they were expected to be one of the worst teams, not just in that conference, but in the FBS this year, because nobody knew what was going to happen at QB. Ironically, QB's actually not been that bad. Passing game has been pretty good. And the running back who is expected to carry them, LJ Martin, has been injured. It does come back this week, but he's not been involved since basically week one. You know, BYU has been playing pretty good and, you know, tough defense for Conley. You know, I don't hate the pick. I mean, I don't love the pick either. I mean, if I had Conley, again, with bye weeks piling up for some of you out there, you know, you're probably gonna be in a position where Conley's the best pick that you have. I don't think it's a terrible play this week, but you know, I can see the logic as well.
Yeah, and again, at the end of the day, we are picking guys that are within the top 40, right? These are not guys that are really like on the bench. These are not guys that are, you know. These are not guys that are like already like in your flex spots, maybe on the bench, maybe in your flex spot. Like these are guys that sometimes you're relying on week to week that we're trying to warn you might not have a great week this week. And I think Conley's absolutely a candidate for a bust week for this week. Your guy that you are sitting, you disagree slightly with my Conley pick. I actually disagree with your running back pick here a little bit. So I'll let you talk about your guy here though, Justin.
Yeah, well, no, and it's a good shout that you just mentioned there, because we are choosing players in the top 40. So it's like, you know, trying to find someone that you can sit, it can get difficult, especially if all these buys piling up. Ironically, there's not that many like great players that are playing this week. So, you know, Claiborne. So I mentioned earlier, I was going to contradict myself on one player, and this is the player I'm referring to, because he is a high volume guy there at Wake Forest. Surprisingly, such a strange year this has been for CFF, because that staff who've been there for a while never have bell cows, even when they had Kenneth Walker. won the Doak Walker Award literally a year later after transferring. They didn't give him 20 touches. He was not a bell cow there. But Claiborne is this year, surprisingly, and he's a high volume guy. And I said earlier with Faison that, generally, if they're super high volume players, I don't really care that much about anything else unless it's a really, really terrible matchup. But again, I had to choose somebody, and the reasons for why I chose Claiborne this week are they're playing Clemson. Clemson's defense, while probably, maybe not as good as they've been in the years past, maybe not as good as people maybe expected, they're still pretty good. And Clemson's been playing good this year. They've been blowing a lot of their opponents out. And you look at Claiborne, he's been banged up. I mean, I was really surprised that he even came back last. Like the injury that he had a few weeks ago looked like it was going to be something major. And then miraculously sort of comes back a week later. I don't know what to make of that, but obviously he was fine. But that's always something, especially this time of year. Some of these running backs are getting worn down, and when they're carrying the team like Claiborne is, that can sort of bust at any moment. And I'm looking at that Ole Miss game specifically. So that's just one dud this year, and that's sort of the game where the game script got out of hand. Ole Miss, really dominated Wake Forest, and Claiborne finished with 11 carries, 20 yards. Had four receptions for 17, but overall on the day he finished with about 8 points. I think that's in PPR formats. So not amazing. And that is kind of the game I'm looking at as well. If this goes wrong, and Clemson's been blowing out a lot of their opponents this year, it could resemble something along those lines. It could also go the opposite way and blow up in my face spectacularly, where this could just be the perfect game script, and it's just the back and forth sort of nail biter. But you have to pick somebody, and that's this is one where I'm thinking, okay, there's huge there not there there is bust potential here, not huge bust potential, but I can see it getting going sideways. I can see a scenario where that can happen.
I think the blowout scenario is one to watch out for here, right? I think you make a valid point there. Here's the deal. You talked about Clemson's defense not being as good as it was in years past, right? Let's look at their rankings, right? They're 67th in defensive EPA per play. They're 60th in rushing defensive team performance. Basically dead middle of the entire country, right? So perfectly average. But perfectly average is good enough to keep some of these running backs that they have faced so far into productive days, right? Let's take a look at some of the running backs they faced so far. Nate Frazier, week one with Georgia, 11 carries, 83 yards, and a touchdown. Next week, Anderson Castle gets 7 carries, 80 yards, and a touchdown versus them. Kendrick Raphael, an NC State rushing attack that has hardly done anything so far this year, 10 carries, 90 yards, and a touchdown in that game. And then Micah Ford, the true freshman running back out of Stanford, 15 carries, 122 yards, and 0 touchdowns. This is a defense that is prone to some explosive plays on the ground. And Demond Claiborne thrives on that. He has had plenty of long runs so far this year. And I think that this is a scenario where he can show up again. And you kind of mentioned before that Ole Miss matchup, right? There are two things here that I think are different. One, this game against Clemson is being played at home for Wake Forest. Not that Wake Forest has the strongest home field advantage in the world, but it means they don't have to go and play at Clemson. And that means that, it's not nearly as tough an environment. That Ole Miss game was on the road at Ole Miss, right? That was a tough one for them to face. Number two, looking at Ole Miss, right? Again, I keep bringing up these EPA per play and these defensive team performance stats, right? Against the run, Ole Miss is number one in the country in rushing defensive team performance. Meanwhile, Clemson, as I pointed out earlier, is down in the 60s, right? That was just a bad matchup for Demond Claiborne all the way around. I think that Claiborne could still have himself a nice day here versus Clemson. But as we pointed out with Conley, right, we're picking guys in the top 40. We're kind of nitpicking some of these guys in order to point out, like, hey, there's a possibility we could have a dud here.
Yeah, and one correction there, and the only reason I remember this is because they canceled the second leg of their home and home. But that Wake Forest game was at home, so they played Ole Miss at
That is
home and then
true. Yep,
canceled
you're
their road
correct.
trip.
Yep.
Not that that changes a lot. I think the counted points are fairly valid there. So yeah, I mean, again, I'm trying to choose a player in the top 40, and it gets tough. But yeah, This is one where it could go sideways, but overall, I wouldn't expect it to be a tough day, but it could be.
All right, let's move on to our wide receivers. Let's finish up these because we're almost at an hour already. We got some questions to get to here as well. I'm probably going to go pretty quickly through mine here because wide receivers, again, we already talked about, like, it's difficult picking guys out of the top 40 already because most of the time bye weeks already take out a lot of them. And quite frankly, at least among wide receivers, there's a ton of great matchups for the top guys this week. And so I kind of got a little cheesy with mine for the guy that's technically within the top 40, but I would never treat him like he's a top 40 wide receiver. Jakobi James, wide receiver out of UMass. He's going up against Mizzou this week. He's been a pretty consistent guy for the most part. You know, he's got 3 games of 18 plus points. He's got decent volume here, 10, 6, 9, 8, 5 targets, basically taking over a little bit of the role that we thought Anthony Simpson was going to get in this UMass offense, right? But terrible matchup this weekend against Mizzou. UMass's offense is not great. They're 99th in the country. To give you an idea, that's actually worse than what they were last year. They were 84th last year. I don't love the idea of just starting a UMass wide receiver in general. I love it even less so when it's against an SEC opponent on the road. And I love it even less so when it's against a Missouri team that just got absolutely spanked last week and they're going to be looking for blood this week. So I don't think James is somebody that, even though he's in top 40, I'm willing to start. Maybe y'all listening are sitting here being like, Jared, I wasn't planning on starting him either, but maybe you were. I'm telling you, I think UMass gets absolutely destroyed this weekend. Justin, you have any quick thoughts on that, or do you want to get to your guy?
No, I'm in full agreement on that one. And yeah, I'll get to my guy. As you said, like, this is actually a pretty good week for wide receivers. It was very hard to find somebody. Like, I was just kind of scrolling through and being like, okay, I really can't justify putting any of these guys. But Noah Short, to my surprise, actually was in the top 40 of points because I guess he's been pretty consistent really all season. And he's part of this wave of Service Academy players in 2024 that are actually consistent CFF assets. Again, strange. That's not usually the case. And part of the reason is, the volume just usually isn't there. And with Noah Short, that is kind of the case. He's kind of a runner more than a receiver. He's labeled as a wide receiver, but he actually gets more carries each game, which I don't mind. I actually kind of like that usually. Fantrax tells me UAB, who Army is playing this week, UAB is third against wide receivers, I assume that is, since Noah Short is a wide receiver, at least in Fantrax's database. So, I mean, I guess in some sort of, but according to some sort of stats, UAB is not a great matchup for the wide receiver position. But more generally speaking, Army and the Service Academy players, it feels like the floor could fall out at any moment with the volume that they see. Short is one of those players where I don't know that at any moment really could be a dud. So again, we had to choose somebody. The pickings were pretty slim this week, and so Noah Short is what I'm picking.
These skill position players for Navy and Army are just absolutely breaking my CFF brain. Like on paper, this volume, this efficiency, none of it should be sustainable at all. But it just has been through the first 5 weeks here, and it's been driving me absolutely nuts because I'm like, everything tells me that, like you said, the bottom's gonna fall out here at some point. And that, here's the thing, we've seen that before with Army players, especially, like, where it looks like, all right, this is the main guy, and then just out of nowhere, they just stop using him like they had been in the past. I can't remember some of the guys in the past, but you can go and look up some of Army stats in the past couple of years, and you'll see guys have really strong beginnings, and or Jakobi Buchanan is a guy that comes to mind where he had a really strong
Yeah,
start
great name.
and then just completely fell off just in the middle of the season for no reason. I think that just in general, my rule is, even though I know they're putting up points right now, I'm still staying away from a lot of these skill position players because, again, I don't want to get caught with my pants down at one point. So
Yeah, absolutely.
that's our sits for the week. Again, just a quick reminder, our starts for the week are Caden Somoza, Seth Hennigan, Dimi Sumo, Rasul Faison, Raylan Sharp, Justin Lockhart, and then our sits for the week are Dylan Gabriel, Sam Levitt, Damon Claiborne, Kwali Conley, Noah Short, and Jakobi James. Now, let's get to some of these questions here from the chat. Or not the chat. I'm so used to the stream. It's questions from our sit start post that we put on Twitter on the @ChasingNetty account. Once again, go make sure you're following that account if you want to make sure your questions get put on the show here in the future. Let me put our little tokens up on the board and then we can get started with this. So Justin, our first question here comes to us from Mr. CK at Co Peeps on Twitter. He has asked us to start one quarterback in a 6-point passing touchdown league between Bryson Daly going up against UAB, or we can go with Jordan McLeod going up against Arkansas State, or we can go with Devin Dampier, quarterback out of New Mexico, going up against Air Force. First of all, before we get too far into this, CK, are you sure there's not a way that you can get multiple of these guys into your starting lineup? Maybe this is start one quarterback league. I don't know.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
But like, woof, this is quite a choice here. But Justin, your thoughts between these guys here, who are you starting among these three?
Well, yeah, I mean, the immediate name that sort of stands out to me is Jordan McLeod. He seems to have been the most consistent of the three throughout the season. And I know we just talked about these Service Academy players, but Bryson Daly as well has been a consistent player for Army. Particularly, he gets a lot of rushing usage. In this UAB game, I think they're favored by like 20 plus points.
25
like that.
And a half.
So it's like, this is going to be another game where I think, you know, possibly Daly has another, you know, great sort of day. Mm-hmm. But it's just one of those things where it's like, again, in the back of my mind, like things could go haywire so quickly with these Service Academy players that if you're choosing one starter, and I think that's how it is in this league, you have one QB spot. That's a huge risk. You know, Jordan McLeod's been really good pretty much all season. And that matchup against Arkansas State, that doesn't scare me. There's nothing really that sort of bothers me with that. I think Dampier is another one where it's like, okay, Air Force is, you know, the problem with playing against Service Academies is you generally think they're going to shrink the game because they're running it so much. But, you know, I mean, Air Force this year hasn't been, you know, hasn't really been a dominant defense. No. And so, you know, this is a matchup again where similar with McLeod, similar to really all three of them. I mean, the matchups are actually all pretty good. So I don't know. I mean, you're sort of just picking which one you feel the safest. At least I'm doing that, which one I feel the safest with. And I think I'm going to roll with McLeod. He's been pretty good as of late, especially. I feel the safest about him because we know, I guess, more about him. He was good last year. He got drafted in most leagues this year. Whereas the other two, I like Dampier, I like Daly, but certainly with Daly, it's a little more of a wild card. Dampier, I like as well. You're asking us to pick one, so I'm going to go with McLeod.
I think Dampier is probably the easy sit among these three for me. Again, his team total for New Mexico is the lowest of these three at 29 points versus both Texas State and Army are close to 40 points with their team totals. And so 10 points less, might as well sit him down, lowest over under of these three teams as well. So I figured, I'll go ahead and sit him. McLeod and Daly is hard, and it's made even harder by the 6-point passing touchdown deal. Here's what the tiebreaker is for me. Both of these matchups are phenomenal, right? Arkansas State's defense, they're 122nd in team defensive performance. They're 120th in EPA per play. UAB's not far behind. They're 119th and 116th in those respective categories, right? So it's hard for me to fully break them away from that. I'm actually going to lean towards Daly, and I know the end of the world is here. I'm actually planning on starting a Army quarterback here. But who's more likely, in your opinion, Justin, to monopolize touchdowns in this game, McLeod or Daly? Because Daly, we know for a fact they're willing to use him around the goal line, right? He's gotten, three-plus touchdowns in each of the last two games, right? He throws throws balls down to Noah Short in them, right? Like, I could see a better, it's easier for me to see 5 touchdowns come out of Daly than it is under McLeod, because McLeod, you got to worry about Ishmael Mahdi, who is looking for some touchdown regression of his own, right? Like, he has been somebody that's been denied plenty of touchdowns.
True.
This absolutely feels like a game where they could get him multiple, considering that Arkansas State's terrible against the run. They're 118th in team defensive performance against the run there. So I think I'm going to lean towards Daly. I'm not just doing this in order to differentiate us a little bit, because I think it's very close between Daly and McLeod, but that's kind of my tiebreaker, especially since UAB is like atrocious versus the run, and that's where Daly's going to shine the most. So
the ceiling for Daly is definitely higher. Like, he could easily hit 50 points this week, but I just feel safer with McLeod. So, you know, as the risk averse analyst, that's who I'm going with. But, you know, I agree with a lot of what Jared is also saying.
All right, let's move on to our second question here. This one comes to us from Mr. Rob Beattie at Beattie_74 on Twitter. He is asking us between two quarterbacks here. You guys load us up with some quarterback questions this week. So if y'all don't like quarterback questions, might as well stop listening right now. We got three of them this week. Rob wants us to decide between Mr. Riley Leonard, who's going up against Stanford this week, or we can go with Tyler Shuck, who's going up against UVA. It's a 4-point passing, non-PPR, in case you think, in case we think that these guys might catch a couple of passes this week. So, Justin, you took the last one. I'll take this one here. I'm going to start Riley Leonard out of these two, and I'm going to sit Tyler Shuck. Mostly because, again, I've been loving what Riley Leonard's been doing ever since that unfortunate game versus NIU, right? He's had 50-plus rushing yards in each of his last three games, 100 yards plus in two of them, 2-plus touchdowns on the ground in each of them. That instantly gives me a much higher floor than I think we can get with Tyler Shuck. Shuck has been very consistent so far this year. Again, 24, 22, 20, 26, 18 points. Like, that is about as safe and consistent as you can get in CFF. That is basically a Jeff Brohm quarterback to a T. He does have himself a nice matchup. Again, you know, favored against UVA by 7.5 points, over under 57.5. Compare that to Notre Dame's game where it's an over under of 46 and they're favored by 23. We'll see. But I personally think that I'm just going to stick with the floor here. I think Riley Leonard's floor is just much higher given his rushing production, and he has the potential to hit that 30-plus game versus I could see Tyler Shuck very much sticking in this, you know, 18 to 26-point range and not going much higher than that. So I'm playing for the ceiling here with this one. Justin, what about you?
I'm in agreement. Riley Leonard would be my pick as well. You're looking at 6 rushing touchdowns over his last 3 games. And it's a good matchup with Stanford. So, you know, I don't have too much more to add. I know we're dragging on here, so I'll keep it short. Leonard's my pick. Love the rushing upside, especially since it's a 4-point passing touchdown format.
Yeah, I agree. That definitely is kind of the big tiebreaker there. Because again, if you look at Shuck, right, again, 4-2-2-2, again, very consistent week to week. You know he's going to get some touchdowns through the air, but Riley Leonard the past couple of weeks has really kind of been taking off a little bit more on that front. So, all right, let's move on to our next question here. Actually, let me put our tokens back and then we can move on to our next question. And this one comes to us from Dynasty Central Sports at DC_YT. Go check out their stuff, I guess. They got another QB starting question for us here. Again, once again, you guys got some pretty insane quarterback rooms here. Tyler Huff going up against New Mexico State, or we can go Eli Holstein going up against Cal, or we can go Kyle McCord, quarterback out of Syracuse, going up against NC State. He didn't put any scoring here. I'm assuming then that this is 4-point passing touchdowns here. Otherwise, McCord, I think, might be a bit more viable there. When it comes to these three, right, I think because it's 4-point passing, McCord does have to take a step back, although he does have just the insane pass attempt numbers that really kind of keep him viable each week here. I think that, again, he provides the safest floor of the bunch here. The game script should be okay in this game. Again, the over-under is 54.5 here. Syracuse favored by 4. So you're looking at, you know, about 27, 30 points expected for them to be scored here. That could fall apart for you real quick if, you know, they score four touchdowns and two of them go to LaQuint Allen or Yassine Willis and everything like that, right? So in addition, while a lot of us have been kind of clowning on NC State for the most part this year, the one thing that I actually been pretty decent at is defense against the pass. They're 44th in the country when it comes to defensive team performance against the pass, which again isn't elite by any stretch, but it's much better than everything else they do. They're 97th versus the run. So I think that McCorr kind of takes the step back there. I'll sit him because, again, both Holstein and Huff have the rushing upside. I mean, look at Holstein the last couple of weeks, 36, 59, 93, 76 yards. That's been phenomenal. And then Huff, even better, right? 101, 80, 77, 176 versus freaking Kennesaw State last week. Ugh, poor Owls. Regardless, the tiebreaker to me comes down to the matchups here. Holstein, while I expect him to do great things once again versus Cal, Cal's defense is 49th in EPA per play. Defensively, they're 54th in team defensive performance so far. Compare that to New Mexico State, who Jacksonville State's going up against this weekend. They're 115th in defensive team performance. Their EPA per play is not much better. Huff himself has some, like, honestly, I think Huff has the higher upside when it comes to the rushing because that's kind of his main game right there. Yes, he probably doesn't have the passing acumen that you would necessarily want out of a guy like maybe Holstein, but I like the idea of Jacksonville State being able to run up the score like they did against Kennesaw State last week. So I'm going to go Huff out of these three guys as my starting quarterback. So Justin, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, well, I don't know if they specify that for starting one or two. I guess you were assuming
I'm assuming one. They didn't specify.
Yeah, that's fine. And it's kind of funny. Like, these three quarterback options, they're all good options. And they're sort of like a spectrum of like very pass heavy on one side. And then sort of in the middle, is sort of a mix between the two. And then on the left with Tyler Huff is sort of your typical run heavy QB, but limited passer. You know, and a lot of what you covered is, you know, I'm in agreement there. You know, I think all three are really good plays this week. I like all three of their matchups. If I'm picking one, I think I'm going to roll with Holstein because he has both sort of the passing and rushing volume. He's kind of a nice mix between these, both of these guys, both the two to his left and his right, Huff and McCord, speaking about. And, you know, we just watched Cam Ward of Miami have a really good week against Cal last weekend. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't see sort of really anything to be too fearful. I know Cal has been pretty, you know, at least their numbers say they've been good on defense this year, but I you know, I don't know how much of that I really buy versus how much of that is sort of skewed by who they've played. Miami had a pretty good time, although it was, you know, it was sort of a weird circumstance. They had the, you know, late comeback. So maybe it was just a strange game, but, you know, what I do remember is Cameron Ward had a good fantasy output by the end of the day. And so I don't know, Holstein's been great this year. Really a surprise, pleasant surprise there with Pitt. They move really fast on offense, which has definitely helped them in fantasy. So I like that situation. I like that matchup. I'd be happy to start all three, but I'll pick Holstein.
Yeah, once again, we're being asked to pick between, you know, elite options in CFF this year with this question. So I don't blame you for starting Holstein here at all. Again, Vegas loves this game, you know, over under 59.5, Pitt favored by 3. Both teams expected to score in this matchup. They're not thinking that Cal is like a defensive stalwart at all. So I think that Holstein's absolutely worth picking up there. And you're talking about offensive pace. Pitt is currently actually 4th in offensive pace in the country right now. So
yeah, no, which is moving really, really fast.
I don't think anybody would have won that bet during the preseason.
No.
So, all right, let's move on to our next question here. This one comes to us from Mr. Andrew Morrow at JungleBoy_DM here. He is asking us to pick between two running backs here. Jalen White, running back out of Georgia Southern, going up against Marshall, or Malik Sherrod, running back out of Fresno State, going up against Washington State here. Justin, who are you picking between these two guys?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. Shout out to Andrew. I know he's a VP subscriber. Good to see him asking a question here. I like both, you know, so both of these guys are kind of similar, you know, high expectations in the off season, rocky starts kind of to start the year, whether that be Jaylen White with sort of up and down usage, or like Sherrod with sort of the injury. But I think they're both back now fully. You know, last I heard, they're both full go. Sherrod's back fully healthy, ready to go this week. And this question is kind of, it hits close to, I have both of them in my home league in the Golden Pig Invitational, and I drafted neither of them, which kind of speaks to a little bit about how their seasons have been going, strangely enough, that they both hit the waiver. You know, Jaylen White, we saw a nice glimpse last weekend of what could be,
What we
20 cut,
had.
what we had really, yeah, 20 carries. You know, he scored, I believe it was twice, at least once.
Twice.
So he had a good, yeah, twice. So he had a good game. I know he hit 20 fantasy points. You know, and it's just been sort of a strange, there's just the inconsistency there in terms of usage and what he's done with Georgia Southern. You know, he started off the year, he actually had a good game because he scored a couple, I think three times or at
Three
least
times.
twice to start. Yeah, three times to start the year. But it was a very strange game. You know, he had a very low yards per carry. And it was kind of just a bizarre sort of thing. But last weekend looked a little bit more sort of standard in terms of, okay, his usage, his yards, and his scores. OJ Arnold is there, and he's a little bit of an annoyance. And then with Malik Sherrod, you know, he's the guy who in the offseason the staff are pretty clear that they want to, you know, he's their guy in the backfield. He's going to be a bell cow for them. And when he is healthy, when he has been healthy this year, that's been sort of the story. I mean, he's gotten pretty good usage, and when he's healthy, you know, he had some good games there to start the year. You know, I think both of them are, you know, pretty good starts this week. I mean, Jaylen White plays Marshall. They've been pretty bad so far. And then Sherrod, let me just look this up, plays Washington State. That's right. We were talking about Fresno earlier. That game, I mean, I don't know, it has a high sort of over under. I suspect Wazoo will be in the lead really for most of that game, but you never really know. If I had to choose one in this long-winded response, I think I'm going to go with Jaylen White, but I like both, really. I mean, it's not really like one is a clear-cut winner for me. I like both, but I think I'd roll with Jaylen White.
Yeah, this one's close, right? And you kind of nailed it on the head, right? It's very similar deals here where there's been some disappointment so far this year. There's reason to be questioning, like, all right, are we getting what we've gotten in the past here, right? I mean, Jaylen White, I mean, shoot, he didn't average above 3.5 yards per carry until this past, and until not this past week, but the week before against Georgia State, right? We finally got what we thought we were going to get out of White this whole time. And I don't know if that's maybe he was injured to start the season and they just were being hush hush about that. Finally was healthy against Georgia State and this is what we're going to get moving forward, or maybe that's the anomaly, right? You're kind of rolling the dice. It is a fantastic matchup. Marshall's 117th in the country versus the run when it comes to team performance on defense, and so that's great to see. But here's the thing, Sherrod's very much in the same boat, right? Banged up, missed the game week four. His return against UNLV was poor, to say the least, right? 9 carries, 5 yards, and a touchdown. 3 catches, 9 yards. Finished the day with less than 10 fantasy points. But he's been on a bye week. Get a week to get healthy there, right? He's getting Washington State. It's a defense that's been a sieve. They're 108th in rushing defensive team performance. I think I'm going to go with White just because we've actually seen him healthy last we saw him, at least very, very least. I'm willing to kind of roll the dice on that, versus I don't want to roll Sherrod back out there and him have another game like he did against UNLV. So I'm gonna lean towards White there, and let me put up our tokens real quick, even though I'm gonna put them right back where they were. So back they go. And here we go. We got one last question here for you guys. Appreciate it, Andrew, for your question. Also appreciate all the rest of you who have submitted questions as well. We got one last one here from Andrew Brought on YouTube, actually. If you guys in the future want to get your sit start questions, leave them on the waiver wire shows going forward, and I will try to incorporate at least one of those per week, because I want to make sure we get questions from all around here. He's got a flex question for us. Pick one of these guys in the flex spot, 2 points per reception. So that's a bit of a change up than what we normally have gotten. And he's got three pretty elite options here. You got Braden Sloan at Kent State, you got Torrey Horton versus San Jose State, and you got Trey Harris at LSU. Obviously, all up and downs here, right? Sloan, great matchup. Horton has been elite in the past, looked really good last week in his first healthy game back, but is that going to continue here? And then Trey Harris, obviously, very much in the air if he's going to even play at LSU this week. I am going to go with Sloan here because, as Justin kind of mentioned earlier in the show, right, with Sloan, you kind of get the best of both worlds with running backs, right? You get the volume, you get the number of opportunities to come with him, but also you get plenty of receptions to go along with that. And in a 2-point PPR league, that very much balances him out with the other wide receiver options. And normally in a 2-point per reception league, I'd be like, yeah, shoot, go with the wide receiver. Go with Horton here probably is where I would go. But Sloan just gets so much work with receiving, I don't think it matters at the end of the day. And so I think I'm going to go with Sloan. I don't think you really need to risk it with the other two. Again, as you mentioned, Sloan's got a fantastic matchup against Kent State there. Worst defense in the country performance-wise. I say just keep it safe. Go with Sloan. Don't worry about it. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, well, I hate to agree with you, but I think on this one, I'm going to have to roll with Sloan as well. I mean, that's an interesting league format, 2-point per reception. Definitely makes this question interesting because, yeah, Sloan gets a lot of work in the receiving game, but, like, he isn't a receiver. So, you know, if it's 2-point per reception, you could sort of make an argument there for a receiver. Unfortunately, though, with the receivers here, it's like, you know, Trey Harris, we don't really know what his health situation is like still. Torrey Horton, kind of a similar deal. I mean, it's kind of been a strange start to the season for him. So if there were better wide receiver options, which sounds strange to say, because I know Trey Harris is like wide receiver 2 right now, but yep. If he was fully healthy, this would be a slam dunk. But if there were better wide receiver options, maybe it'd be a little easier to go that route. Sloan is kind of like, you know, I'm going to throw out this throwback name. Some of you will recognize Max Borgie for Washington State a few years ago, where he used to get so much sort of air volume. But Sloan also gets close to 20 carries per game in the games where they're not getting blown out. And this could be one where, you know, again, just on volume alone, he should have a pretty safe floor against a bad team. I know I referenced Simonza earlier, so, you know, a portion of you will be hoping Sloan doesn't soak up all the touchdowns. But, like, as we mentioned, if he does score, it could be via receiving anyways. So there's room for both to eat. I like Sloan in this game quite a bit. And yeah, I mean, that's we'll see how it goes. But I think that 2-point per reception and his receiving work, I think he's got a nice floor in this one and a nice ceiling. So,
all righty. Well, we'll put our tokens back. And with that, we will come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. If you have not already, leave a like, a comment, and a subscribe. If you're watching this on the YouTube side of things, if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus Kitten Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. Make sure you check out Justin's awesome content over at Volume Picks. He's got weekly articles over there, in-depth articles over there. I know he's also doing some fantastic work with Joe over at Purple Rain during the season as well. So go check out their content over there on that website as well. We'll see you guys back here next Monday for another round of waiver wire pickups for next week. And then Justin, hopefully we'll have you back on here next week, man. It's always a pleasure having you on.
Oh yeah. I'll be back 100%. As long as you want me back, I'm back on next week. So, you know, I think it should be a pretty regular appearance now going forward.
I am very much looking forward to it. With all that being said, appreciate all of you guys out there, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.